The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Roto World Baseball Show. I'm your host, Eric Samulski, joined by Scott Pianowski as we continue our fantasy baseball position previews. Today we are looking at the third base position. Just as a reminder, we have already covered catcher, first base, second base, and shortstop. So if you've missed those episodes, please make sure to go back to the Roto World Baseball Show wherever you get your podcasts and check out those. But third base, there's some exciting names to discuss. Scott and I have some different names on our list, so you'll kind of get a different look at some potential ways to build out this position. Scott, how are you doing, and how do you feel in general about the third base position heading into 2024 drafts?
I don't think – I know you have some stats that may argue to the contrary, but I don't think it's the deepest position that it's been in recent years, and it's one of these things where – if I see similar players in the first 10 rounds who play outfield and play corner infield, I'm probably going to take the infielder. That's a priority for me this year.
Yeah. I do have some stats. As Scott mentioned, I did a fantasy baseball State of the Union last year at the end of the season. They were actually third base doubled the amount of hitters with over 200 plate appearances who hit at least 240. There were 37 third basemen who had over 200 at-bats, plate appearances, who hit over 240. That was the most of any infield position. Six third basemen hit 30 or more home runs last year. Only four first basemen did. I think historically we've kind of thought of first basemen as like the big boppers, but it seems like third base has as much, if not more, high-end power than first base does. And third base had the fewest players with 15 stolen bases from any position aside from catcher, obviously. So it looks like if you're looking for power, third base is the position to get it. If you're looking for power late from like a corner infield spot, I know I'm currently in some slow drafts where I'm looking for that, and there are definitely some options at third base. You're not really going to find steals at third base, which means guys who do steal bases at third base could give you some nice differentiation and boost your stolen base total. And the averages appear to be a little bit better. So I will say, to me, it's not the deep of what, you know, some of the deepest positions, but I actually think it's deeper than some people let on. And I'm, you know, I plugged in the ATC projections into the SGP document to get, you know, draft values. There are more $2 or higher valued third basemen than there are shortstops or second basemen. There are fewer $20 players. So maybe the high end isn't as deep, but I think there's some interesting depth, and we'll talk about some of those guys today. And some of those guys at the end of the show, when we do our sleepers, some changes at the position in the off season. I'm curious if it moves the needle for you at all. Eugenio Suarez was traded to the Diamondbacks. He is one of those third basemen that has historically been a really good, source of late power. Does it matter for you and how you think of him that he went to Arizona?
Yeah, because not only does he land in Arizona, but he's leaving Seattle, which depressed his average the last couple of seasons. He didn't make my top 20, but I actually think Suarez is a nice late rent value.
Yes. I'm actively looking to get him in later drafts for that power. He also did not make my top 20. We talked about Jaime Candelario before, so we're not going to belabor that point, but he is third base eligible. He moved to Cincinnati. He will show up for me later. I don't know if he'll show up for Scott, but he showed up for both of us on the first base preview, so take a look at that. Michael Busch, who was a former top prospect in the Dodgers organization, was traded to the Cubs, where he will presumably be the Cubs' first baseman. However, he is third base eligible in fantasy. He didn't appear in either of our lists, but what is your interest level in Michael Busch heading into a likely starting job?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still not sure that the Cubs' final roster is set. I mean, we have to see what they do with Cody Bellinger, but
agreed.
He's still just 26. So, you know, maybe he's a post hype guy. The Dodgers haven't, you know, always had the patience for, you know, they have such a veteran lineup, and sometimes players like this fall through the cracks. I'll be interested in Busch if he actually has that job. Just right now, we can't assume it. It's also possible he could be in a platoon because he's a left-handed hitter.
Yeah, and there are enough prospect guys that I follow who have some minor, hesitations regarding the swing and miss in his game. He made real improvements at AAA last year for the Dodgers, but he, you know, spiked a pretty big strikeout rate in the major league level, and there's some thought that he is a, you know, 28% strikeout rate guy, which could keep the batting average in check. So you could be looking at, you know, a mid-20s homer hitter with a 230, 240 average, and it's like, you know, the Cubs have a few of those guys. I mean, it's like Patrick Wisdom, you know, obviously Christopher Morel does more in terms of a speed component, but I don't believe that he is this guy who's going to come and like take over the third base or first base position when he gets eligibility. On our shortstop episode, I talked about Joey Ortiz as a late round guy who I really like. Joey Ortiz is also third base eligible and is moving to Milwaukee from the Orioles. He may slot in at third base at the start of the year. We don't really know how that's going to play out, but he is a guy I'm interested in. The biggest name at the position is currently unsigned. It's Matt Chapman. Are you interested in Chapman regardless of where he goes? Does he have to go to a particular spot for you to be interested? What are your thoughts on Matt Chapman as it stands right now?
By the way, quick aside to Ortiz, I realize he was part of the Burns trade, but what a tough time for Milwaukee baseball fans. They lose a great manager. They lose a great GM. They lose their number one starter. It just feels like they're rebooting everything, and they're starting from scratch, and it just makes me kind of depressed. With Chapman, I'm just concerned the batting average isn't going to play. The power will be solid, but not elite. Obviously, he's a fantastic defensive player. You get nothing for that. He's just on the back nine of his career, and I think it's unlikely I'll look at him as any kind of a proactive pick, no matter where he goes. And I mean, like, he's not going to go to Colorado or something. They're not going to sign him. But
right.
He'd have to land in a perfect spot for me to change my stance on Chapman, which right now is hands off.
Yeah, I like him where, because I've seen the draft price start to fall, and he kind of sometimes tends to go closer to like where Eugenio Suarez is going, not at the same depressed price. A lot has been made on pulled fly balls. There have been so many fantasy baseball articles about pulled fly balls. And if you've read any of them, you know that Matt Chapman barreled the heck out of the ball last year and didn't do it to the pull side nearly enough. So I do have some optimism that Chapman could see a little bit of power boost because even though his season last year was propped up by like a really good first 6 weeks of the year, I think he still hit the ball really hard, but maybe it was because of the dimension changes in Toronto, who knows, but he wasn't nearly as pull happy as he had been before. Maybe that's age. We will see, but I like him as a late power source. And I'm interested in him pretty much regardless of where he goes. If he goes somewhere like, you know, the Giants, that park isn't great for power. I would love to see him in Wrigley. We just talked about how the Cubs lineup doesn't feel like it's full. So who knows where they go on that. But Chapman's somebody I'm keeping an eye on. And then two guys I just wanted to ask you if it matters to you at all. We did see team changes for Gene Segura, who went to Cleveland, and for Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, who went to Toronto. And they've actually said that he is in the competition to start at second base for them. Does it matter for you that either of these guys switched jerseys?
Man, I mean, Toronto has like 17 guys in battle for that one position. So I feel like even if somebody gets it, it's going to be a revolving door. Cleveland's lineup really concerns me. And that's, we're going to talk about Jose Ramirez later. This is a bottom five offense. It was a bottom five offense last year, and I think it actually looks worse on paper this year. So somebody landing in Cleveland, I view, is certainly a negative.
Yeah, and they rumors are at least that they might start Kyle Manzardo out in AAA, and there were people that were like, oh, the lineup will get better because they traded for Manzardo and he'll be their first base, but then maybe he won't be. So, yes, I fully agree on all of that. You know, Segura, I had bought in on like the speed aspect of him last year. It didn't really pan out. And so I'm not super into either of these options. But there are some guys within our top 20s and beyond who Scott and I are far more bullish on, and we'll get to those in just a second. But spring training is here. So for those looking to get ahead on the upcoming MLB season, grab your Roto-World Baseball Draft Guide. It's loaded with comprehensive positional rankings, projections, and player profiles to ensure your draft is a success. Visit NBCSports.com/draftguide and use code BASEBALL24 to get 10% off at checkout. That's NBCSports.com/draftguide and use code BASEBALL24 to get 10% off at checkout.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, Scott, we're going to dive into our rankings. As we've done on every positional show, Scott and I are going to work from 20 up, and we will keep the top 12 guys for the end, because, again, if you're in at least a 12-team league, those are technically your starting third baseman. So, Scott, from 12 to 13, who are your third baseman?
So, Luis Rengifo feels like he falls into every one of our programs because he qualifies at four different positions. He will play a lot for the Angels, and that's half the battle. Cabrian Hayes. Oh, unbelievable defensive player. Unfortunately, you get nothing for that defense. And I think last year's stolen base is probably not going to come back. Not a fast player, but maybe the willingness to run is there. So 19 is about as high as I can go for Hayes. Jake Berger's power season seems a little bit fluky, but because of the depth of position, he's a top 20 player for me. Maybe once Chapman signs, Chapman takes over where Berger's at, and that's a placeholder ranking. Isaac Paredes is somebody I think you should just fade this year. Last year, he put up a bunch of RBIs. It was fluky. We know Tampa Bay likes to change the lineup day in, day out. I'm not sure that he's a regular this year, so I think he's somebody you should try to avoid drafting if you can. Nolan Gorman is my 16th third baseman, St. Louis Cardinal voodoo at its best. Alec Bohm, maybe not ever going to be a star, but he's a pretty solid player. He qualifies at both corner positions, and that Philly lineup sure is deep. Max Muncy, you're going to have to get your batting average somewhere else, but we know the power will always play in unbelievable bat flips as well. I don't think you have Yandy Diaz in your third base ranking, so I went with Yahoo eligibility, which is extremely liberal, and so he'll qualify at third base in Yahoo formats, maybe not in the format that you play in, but he is the rare Tampa Bay player you don't have to worry about. Day in, day out, Diaz will be in the lineup.
Yes, Yahoo. We'll say generous is the word. Yahoo,
you're generous, generous for sure.
Yeah. But no, I didn't have Yandy. Yandy would, just for people, he would have made my top 20 if I had put him in the rankings. So that is something to consider. 20th for me was Isak Paredes. Much like you, I think I know that his power is because he pulls fly balls. That is his approach. I still can understand that's what he does and that's how he gets to power, and suggest that last year's power was fluky. I believe he will always hit more home runs than he quote unquote should, but I don't know that we're going to see what we saw last year. But again, so 20th for me. Luis Renjifo is 19. Ryan McMahon is 18. We've talked about both of these guys with multi-position eligibility. Renjifo is second, short, third outfield. McMahon is second and third, which gives him, you know, middle infield and corner as well. Max Muncy for me is 17th. Again, another guy kind of in the Matt Chapman, Eugenio Suarez mold of probably not going to get a great batting average, but you're going to get a lot of home runs. I just like the team context a little bit more for Chapman than those guys. Alec Bohm, 16th for me. Jaime Candelario is 15th. We talked that he is first base and third base eligible. The Reds have said he's an everyday player. So he's going to play majority of the time at first base, but he will slot over at third sometimes when guys need days off. Ke'Bryan Hayes is 14th. I have some stats for you on that. And I have Spencer Steer at 13th, who obviously is Jaime Candelario's new teammate and will play primarily outfield for them. However, he is third base eligible. So I want to talk about Hayes. You had him 19th. I actually just wrote an article, which you can all find on NBCSports.com. Go to RotoWorld. It's basically, it's called Should He Pull More Fly Balls? So I don't know if you can tell what the article is about. But it's basically looking at a hitter's batted ball profile and deciding if they should actually pull more fly balls. And what's interesting is that Hayes actually started to do it last year, but nobody noticed because it happened at the end of the season and the Pirates were already done and nobody paid attention. But Hayes missed a month of the season over the summer. He came back on August 2nd. In the 49 games he played from August 2nd on, he hit .299. With a .539 slugging percentage, 10 home runs, he had a 35.4% pull rate, and he had a 41.5% fly ball rate in those 49 games. That pull rate was 8% higher than he had in the first half of the season, and the fly ball rate was 4% higher than the first half of the season. But what's interesting to note is that his season-long pull rate in 2023 was 31%. That was 4% higher than his best season heading into 2023, which means heading into 2023, the most Ke'Bryan Hayes had ever pulled the ball in a season was 27%. And he was pulling it over 35% of the time in the final 2 months of the year. So for me, that's a pretty stark difference, right? Anytime you're talking about potentially a 10% increase in pull rate, you're talking about a real difference. Now, again, it's a two-month sample. 50 games is not nothing, but it's not a full season. So we don't know what will happen over the course of an entire season. But he hit .299 with 10 home runs in 50 games. So you're kind of like, why would you change that approach when it was clearly working for you? Now, I'm not going to extrapolate it out and say, oh, well, then if you get 150 games from Ke'Bryan Hayes, you're going to get 30 home runs. No, I don't think Ke'Bryan Hayes is all of a sudden becoming a 30 home run hitter. But I could see the argument where if this approach carries over, I think he could push to be a 20 homer bat. And we've seen batting average from him already. We've seen last year he was able to sustain the batting average while hitting for the power. And we just talked about, you know, chip in steals. He had 20 in 2022. He had 10 last year despite playing only 124 games. So could he be a 20-homer, 15-steal guy who hits .260, .270? I think that's certainly within the range of outcomes. He's going to play every day when he's healthy because of that defense you talked about. So I kind of really like him as that deeper – again, I have him ranked – 14th for me. So he's a corner infield option or a deep league third baseman. And I love that maybe he's a sneaky steals option if you kind of gloss over third base early in the position and wait and fill it like really late in a 15-team league. I think there's value in Ke'Bryan Hayes.
Wow, that's fascinating breakdown of Hayes. And I'll admit I was moved enough that I'll probably adjust his ranking up a little bit. I've always liked the player. He doesn't strike out. Great defense. He's a smart ball player, which the best players so often are. He's capable of walking at a plus rate. He didn't do it last year, but he's up there with a thoughtful approach. And as you said, why not pull the ball more? And what happens when you pull the ball more? You hit more home runs. You hit with more hard contact. These are all good things. And he's even in an age pocket where a career season would make sense. I don't think anybody thinks of Hayes as a future star, but he was a first-round pick. He was one of the more rated players in his prospect class at one point, was seen as a top 10 prospect, and I realize a lot of defense was baked into that. But to me, before we started this program, I would have told you that Ke'Bryan Hayes was just a guy who just didn't have any upside at all, and you were buying into kind of a boring floor. You made the case because these players are human beings. They're always trying to improve different things, and sometimes they can change things and it doesn't work out. This is the case of a player showed the ability to change, and it did work out late last season. And it was shielded, right? The Pirates, who were contenders early in the season, they weren't contending late in the year. Who was watching Ke'Bryan Hayes closely last year? Apparently you were, Eric. And I think you make the case that there's a little bit of latent upside here. We don't like to say things like league winner and stuff, and I'm not even sure he's necessarily a needle mover. But I think I probably need to move Hayes up a couple of slots. You won the Ke'Bryan Hayes debate.
You love when hitters make changes while everybody's doing fantasy football best ball draft,
sure.
And nobody's paying attention.
Nobody's watching the Pirates on April 29th. Let's just be honest about that. Although maybe this year, if Emil Cruz is healthy, we will be watching the Pirates.
It is funny because there's always the discussion that like second half changes get counted more towards drafts than first half changes, right? We see like Kodai Senga is going so early in drafts because he was great in the second half. And I really do think there's a tax on kind of like boring players and teams, right? Like nobody's looking at the skills boost of the Pirates, or even like, let's say somebody on the A's had a huge second half, like unless it was when Matt Olson went bananas, like people aren't really kind of like, they're kind of shoulder shrugging that a little bit. And I think also it's a little bit of fatigue with Ke'Bryan Hayes, right? Like for years we've said, oh, if he pulls the ball more, oh, if he lifts the ball more, oh, there's upside, and it has never come to fruition. Then I think people just assume it's not going to happen. And I think it's important to understand that like sometimes these things happen later than we want or more delayed than we want, and that doesn't mean they can't happen. And again, he's just 27 years old, so it's not like he's in some late career renaissance. Like he's still very much in the prime of his career.
Yes, I like to say that player development is not always linear. Now, player regression at the second half of career is almost always linear. And once a player starts going down a bad path, it's hard to talk yourself back into him. But this also illustrates with your breakdown of Hayes, just to take it in a more general tack, we have all these stats now you can get granular with. It used to just be, oh, somebody's production changed and you had to kind of take it at face value. Maybe you read something a beat writer said, or maybe you watched something with your own eyes, whatever. Now we can actually say, well, what was different? What was different in the approach? Was he trying to lift the ball, pull the ball? Was he more patient? Was he more aggressive? Stuff like that. So you can point to, it's one thing just to say, oh, a production level change. And sometimes those can just be the ebbs and flows of a season. But in this case, there was a specific reason we can pinpoint to, and it just ties in nicely to a player who's on a kind of a boring pedestrian team. And the age pocket is right for a step forward. Maybe not a breakout necessarily, but a step forward. Yeah. You made the case. I think Hayes is a good utility corner target right now, about pick 171 in an NFBC format. So I think he's a good chance to outkick that ADP coverage.
I think that differentiation you just brought up is really important. Is like we're always looking for breakouts, and sometimes step forwards are just as valuable in fantasy in terms of getting value in a draft, right? Like a guy who takes a step forward but doesn't have a huge breakout can still be a really good pick at a particular spot. But we're always looking for like ultimate upside as opposed to just like little progressive upside. I wanted to ask you about another 27-year-old who took a big step forward last year, which was Alec Bohm. Hit a career high 20 home runs, had a career high 97 RBIs, still hit for a pretty solid average, 274, had a career low strikeout rate, career low swinging strike rate. So he seemed to get just have a better overall approach. He was another guy who was thought of as like a very advanced hitting prospect, and it took him a little while to adjust. We both have him, you know, around the same spot. You have him 15th, I have him 16th. So I'm curious just what your confidence level is with him. And then my question with guys like this who are first base, third base eligible is, are you happy rostering him at either position, or is there like a profile that you think is better suited to first base or better suited to third base?
If I were to take Bohm as my static starter at first base or third base, I would want to be one of the earliest teams to address the corner position with that third guy, but doesn't mean he can't be a part of a championship roster. I think it's important to notice the guys who maybe don't walk a lot, you know, 4.9%, 6.9% the last 2 years, he's making contact at such a high rate. That's actually kind of hurting. His contact skills are hurting his walk rate, because when he swings, he puts the ball in play. So you can never walk when the ball's been put in play. And he'll have decent lineup around him. Right now he's going to hit sixth, but that could move up maybe to fifth. Full season of Bryce Harper. They should get a full season of Trey Turner at the normal level that he's at. This is one of the five best lineups in baseball. You're getting Bohm at the right part of his career. I don't know that he's – maybe last year is probably as good as it gets for him, but where he's going currently in ADP, if he did something similar to last year, I'd be perfectly happy.
Yeah, I fully agree. This is another guy who was making a conscious approach change in that, like, his ground ball rate has gone down consistently over the last 3 years. He is putting the ball in the air a little bit more. Nothing crazy, but a little bit more, and that's why you're starting to see a little bit of power. For me, the reason I had Hayes over him is obviously the speed component, and I think 20 is the ultimate upside for Bohm. I think he's, you know, I think Hayes could become a 17, 18, 19 homer guy. I think Bohm is that, and I think Hayes has the speed element to it. But if I'm happy to take Hayes as my corner infielder, I'm happy to take Bohm as well, and I do love the position versatility. I don't know that we're going to see another jump, but it's important that maybe this jump was real, I think is important to acknowledge that it wasn't a fluke season, but maybe this was the season.
The two positions and the depth of that Philadelphia lineup are what break the tie for me. Mm-hmm. First base is not, this is not a great first base class. So the fact that Bohm does add an extra position, you might say, well, so what? I'm just going to play him at third. I mean, you having another option on my roster, because invariably injuries are going to hit. I love it when, if you have to withstand an injury, you can just put the best player on your bench into the lineup because you have enough roster flexibility. So I'm always going to want to gravitate to a few of those guys. Also, I mentioned you winning the debate on Hayes. I also want to say you also won the pronunciation battle with Isak Paredes. I was so insistent on making sure I got Paredes' his last name right that I didn't get his first name right, which is Isak, not Isaac. Maybe I've been watching too many Love Boat episodes, but you won the pronunciation battle today as well. I bow. I'm actually impressed by that. That shows you care about the game and you want to, you know, be respectful of the
players. I was an English teacher at a bilingual French English school for 11 years. So the amount of French names that I stared at on my roster sheet when I was doing attendance and was like, oh God. So I'm trying to get real in tune with pronunciations.
Well done. Well, my earlier career was as a newspaper reporter and covering high school girls sports at a time when all the parents in America decided to treat the letter I, the letter Y, and the letter EE as interchangeable. Drove me crazy in my first wave. And thankfully baseball names are a little bit easier than 17-year-old volleyball player names.
They are. And the next name on your list is actually probably the easiest at all to spell. So let's get to your top 12.
Yeah, Spencer Steer at 12. He's going to play multiple positions. Sometimes that can be a little bit of a drain on a player's value. And Cincinnati, you mentioned Candelario in passing. I don't know why they signed him, because I think they have enough roster depth without him. But Cincinnati's lineup is going to be a little bit different every day. Is that a feature? Is that a bug? Josh Jung at 11, nice season for Texas last year, but he doesn't have a track record before that, so I was a little bit nervous to put him into the top 10. Nolan Arenado, I guess he's a decline year, still a plus defender. I think the best defensive third baseman I've seen in this generation, probably bound for the Hall of Fame, but he is on the back nine, makes you a little bit nervous. We talked about Ha-Seong Kim on the shortstop episode. He also qualifies at third base, doesn't hit the ball that hard, but he'll be fine category juice wise. Ellie De La Cruz, we had a long talk about him on our shortstop show, a super wide range of outcomes. I love a boring veteran value. That's what Alex Bregman is. He's not the 2019 maybe MVP of the league. He came in second to Mike Trout that year. He's not that player anymore. He is into a contract year. It sounds like the talks have stalled, but in a very good Houston lineup, which will insulate him. I think you'll make your money back on that. Manny Machado at six off elbow surgery. Just makes me a little bit nervous. Royce Lewis, monster season for Minnesota, at least a limited season. Is it too good to be true? I wasn't really sure what to do about him. I wish there was a better lineup depth around him in Minnesota. Gunnar Henderson, year two. It's time to buy at the top of a Baltimore lineup that looks really, really scary. Rafael Devers, the only thing I don't like about him is his supporting cast. That's why he's number three and not number two where Austin Riley is. Look at those last three seasons come out to the average. You can't miss with him. He's a target player for me. If you get him early in the second round, you've done really well. What do you do with Jose Ramirez? 30s now. I hate the lineup around him. He's a first-round pick everywhere. I'm not going to pay the ADP on that. I'd rather get Riley 3 to 5 picks later. I'd rather get Rafael Devers maybe a round later. Mm-hmm. I have Ramirez ranked first. I don't want you to draft him in 2024.
Yeah, we'll put a pin in that. We'll talk about Ramirez in a second. My 12 is Ha-Seong Kim, who we actually didn't talk about a lot on the shortstop episode, so we should get into that a little bit here. I have Jake Berger at 11. I believe in the power a little bit more than you. I think the everyday playing time is there, and so I like him where he's going right now. I have Josh Jung at 10, Nolan Arenado and Alex Bregman 9 and 8, and like you, I think that they're kind of like boring veterans who get forgotten about, but I think their production should be solid. I have Royce Lewis at 7, Ellie De La Cruz at 6, Manny Machado 5, Gunnar Henderson 4, Rafael Devers 3, Austin Riley 2, Jose Ramirez 1. Let's talk about Ha-Seong Kim, because we didn't mention him a lot on the shortstop episode. He is another guy, multi-position eligibility, which is incredibly helpful. And I believe that there is more truth to what we saw in his power than some do, because he does hit a lot of his home runs pulled, which, like we talked about with Paredes, gives him a little bit more viability in that 17 home runs. You know, maybe he's a 15 homer guy. But I guess I'm not like 15 homers, 25 steals, 15 homers, 30 steals in a lineup. I don't really love anymore. Batting average, fine, not great. I do like him. I guess maybe I think he's more valuable as like a move him around corner middle type of bat. Why are you so bullish on Kim?
Yeah, you look at his Savant page and it's fascinating because all the hard hit metrics are lousy. And then all the what I call the quote unquote smart stats are really good. He's got a very high walk rate, a very low strikeout rate. Almost never swings at a pitch outside the strike zone. And his stolen bases last year are better than what you'd expect based on his sprint speed, which is good, but it's not elite. So I see a player, you know, last year, OBP of 351, going to bat at the top of a San Diego lineup. I know they've lost Soto, but I still think that San Diego lineup is very deep. They're going to run aggressively. And I can get past the fact that he doesn't murder the ball, that he doesn't have this, his high hit metrics are pinned to the left when we want them pinned to the right. That's okay with me. He has a leadoff profile. I think he's going to score 100 runs. I think he's going to steal anywhere from 30 to 45 bases. He won't be punchless. Maybe 17 home runs is over his skis a little bit. Maybe it goes back to the 11 he hit the previous season, but he's not going to hit three. I mean, he's going to hit some home runs. And with this great control of the strike zone, and I know he has to offset not hitting the ball hard, but sometimes when a player runs at better than league average speed, sometimes hitting the ball soft isn't that big of a deal. I think he could hit maybe 270, 275. You throw in a couple of different positions. Yeah, I think he's a sneaky value obscured by the more star power driven Padres lineup.
Yeah, I think you're talking me back into it. I started the offseason a little bit more bullish on him, and then I questioned it a little bit. And for me, you know, I was just seeing some of these guys, like the boring guys, like the Bregmans and the Arenados, and was just thinking, okay, we're dinging these guys because they're on the downside of what we're used to from them. but their stats are also relatively consistent, right? Like you take Alex Bregman, you mentioned, you know, that 2019 feels fluky, but, you know, he's a 260 hitter who hit 25 homers and get at least 180, 190 runs plus RBIs in a really good lineup. There's value there. And, you know, 30 is not old. I mean, definitely as somebody who's much older than that, I don't think it's old. It's definitely not old from a baseball perspective, even if it's not in his prime anymore. But maybe Kim, for me, deserves to be up ahead of, you know, Jake Berger, who I believe the power is real, but there are definitely some other concerns there. Josh Young, I was a big believer in. And so I kind of continue to believe that there's another level there for a young guy that I thought could have contended for an AL Rookie of the Year, had health been on his side. Another injury thing I want to discuss is Manny Machado.
Before you go there, let me just jump in on Bregman really quick. The last two seasons, he's come into the year off, I believe, two major surgeries, or the wrist surgery 2 years ago, and last year it was a finger surgery. And then it took a while for him to hit his stride. Second half last year, 290, 394, 507, the Bregman we expect. I don't buy that he's a 260 hitter. His career average, I think, is around 280 or so. And he's going to bat second after Jose Altuve in front of Kyle Tucker and Alvarez. Just this lineup isn't maybe as deep as it's been before, 1 through 9, but 1 through 5, it's still awfully deep. It's the boring veteran. I used to call these guys the Ibanez All-Stars. Nobody's walking into draft day with the Bregman shirt on. And maybe, maybe a relative, Larry Schechter is a relative of Bregman. He might be doing it, but nobody else is doing it. But don't take last year's stats at face value. I think the player we saw in the second half is closer to who Alex Bregman really is. I want you to target him at his current value.
Yeah, I'm fully in on Bregman as somebody who gets who becomes an afterthought. I think Machado is also being dinged a little bit. Machado is somebody who had off-season surgery, but the Padres have already said that he is healthy. He could play the field right now. They're probably just going to DH him at the beginning of the year, because why would they want to put him in the field if they don't feel like it's necessary, if they can put him at DH? So I think people saw that, oh, he's going to DH to start the year, and were like, oh, well, he's not healthy, and no, I don't want to draft an injured player. The Padres have also said that they expect him to be healthy enough to play the field opening day. They're just choosing to let him DH early on. So in a down year for him, because last year was technically a down year, he hit 260 with 30 home runs, 75 runs, 91 RBI, had a lower strikeout rate than before, still was a sub 20 strikeout rate guy, had a double digit barrel rate, had a 114 max EV. Like, all of it still suggests he can hit. And he was playing through an injury at the end of last year. I have no reason to believe he's not a 280 hitter still who can hit 30 home runs. And so I know you and I have him pretty similarly. I have him 5, you have him 6. But I feel like he's kind of being an afterthought, when I still think you would be happy if you end your draft with Manny Machado as your third baseman.
Yeah, you know, I have a block with Machado. I have to get over it, because he's such a fluid player that sometimes it doesn't look like he's trying. He's obviously, baseball is very hard. You have to try out there. 258 last year. I don't think projections should be seen as gospel. And look, we're trying to talk about ranges of outcomes and all that. And I realize when you go on like a page like FanGraphs, there's like 7 or 8 projections to look at. They all start to look the same. A lot of them use similar formulas. So I just see a lot of 269 projection for his batting average. He only stole 3 bases last year. I asked myself, he's into an age 31 season. It doesn't make him ready for retirement, but it could be the back 9 for Machado. The second half of the San Diego lineup isn't anywhere near as deep as the first half. Is it possible he's a 3-category player? Now, I guess it speaks to what his batting average is going to be. And even the San Diego park, it's not as extreme as it used to be. It's still not a plus offensive park. I don't know. Too many things are moving in the wrong direction. And again, maybe it's Machado's style, and I need to get past that because he's just so graceful that it doesn't look hard for him to do what may look hard for 90% of athletes, would certainly be hard for me to do. But he's not somebody I've landed on early in my draft season.
Yeah, I've taken him a few places when I don't get one of the early guys. But I hear you. And those are valid concerns. I think we're not seeing a step forward for him. It's just whether he can get back to those career levels or not. Royce Lewis, you know, you mentioned when we read our rankings, health is a huge component for him. Do you have a strong feeling on him? Are you willing to take him at ADP? Are you a little worried to get him that early in drafts, even though obviously we acknowledge the talent?
I just would like a bigger track record. I feel like people are so excited about him that you have to buy him at the high end of his range. And that you talk about injury concerns. That's Minnesota, right? Byron Buxton is always, doesn't matter what they do, stop running bases, stop playing the field. He always gets hurt. Alex Kirilloff always gets hurt. Max Kepler goes into these like 6-week slumps. I think Minnesota is, I know the division isn't very strong, but I would not be surprised at all if they finished under 500. This is a team I'm trying to draft away from. I wish Lewis were surrounded by a better lineup. I wish he had more of a track record to go on. I wish he didn't have so much ADP helium. I might end up with all the FOMO on this. We may do a show in the spring, what players you're wrong on, and maybe I'll say Lewis. It's not that I've ranked him significantly lower or anything. I'm just not drafting him.
Yeah, I'm with you on that too. It scares me to take that type of injury profile. He's had injury to the same knee a few times, so it scares me to take that a little bit early. I also like some of the top options.
Let me say one other thing about Lewis. You said scared you to take him early. You should not be talking yourself into early picks. You should be thrilled with like the first five or six or seven guys you take. And then later, you know, the guys you take later are going later for a reason. They may not have a job, or you may not like their lineup, or they may be coming off an injury, or, you know, whatever it is. That's why they're going in the middle rounds or the late rounds. Your first five or six guys are the signature players you should be in love with. You should be like, I'd be shocked if this guy didn't have a great season. And I can't get there with Lewis.
I agree with you on that. You can't miss with these early picks. There's no wiggle room to miss. So you need to be fully confident, and that does make me nervous. There's a kind of a discussion. Austin Riley and Rafael Devers basically go around the same point in drafts. They're pretty much unanimously second and third in most rankings. Do you have a firm preference between the two? And I'm just curious why.
Oh, it has to be Riley, because the Atlanta lineup 1-9 is absurd. Where Boston can tell itself a story that the top half of the lineup is good. And we've talked up Grissom on some other episodes. Maybe he becomes a plus player for them. But Atlanta has the best lineup in baseball. And right now, Boston is hoping to have maybe a league average lineup. That's a huge difference. Fenway Park obscures some of that because it's a better place to hit than Atlanta. But you want the buoyancy of a loaded lineup of pieces around you who are going to be on base when you're up, who are going to drive you in when you're on base. So. Also, just the fact that Austin Riley has been such a monster for 3 years in a row. Not that Devers has ever had a bad season. Who has ever drafted Rafael Devers and regretted it? But you want, you know, we talk about fantasy football. You identify the best offenses and draft players on those offenses. Well, we do that in fantasy baseball too. Who's the best offense in baseball? Unquestionably Atlanta. Who is their second or third best offensive player? I would say it's going to be Riley. I want him on as many teams as possible. And the fact that he's a second round pick, I think, is wrong. To me, he deserves to go in the top 12 or top 15 of any draft.
Yeah, I have a preference for Riley over Devers too. I think Devers is as safe as they come. If you're unable to get Riley, like, I look at, you know, people are down on the Red Sox, but I don't think their lineup is meaningfully worse than it was last year, right? They lost Alex Verdugo, but they brought in Tyler O'Neill. That it, to me,
nobody in Boston is going to miss Alex Verdugo. They would have offered. I think half of the state would have offered to drive Alex Verdugo to the airport.
That's a net positive. You've got, even we talked on our shortstop episode about how we have concerns about Trevor Story, but you get a full season of Trevor Story and Vaughn Grissom as your middle infield is a far cry better than a full season of Pablo Reyes and Enrique Hernandez. As much as Hernandez was a fan favorite in Boston, so you know. You're losing again. I guess you lose Justin Turner, but that's the spot that Tyler O'Neill takes. Yoshida is in, you know, the regular DH. Jaron Duran, full-time outfielder. Willier Abreu mixes in. Like, this is a lineup that's slightly better, if not the same, as last year. And Devers hit 33 home runs, drove in 100 runs, scored 90 runs, hit 271. Like, there's no reason Devers isn't a 280 hitter with 35 home runs and 190 runs plus RBI again. There's just, and I think we shouldn't let the offseason narrative about Boston cloud what he is capable of doing.
Fair point. What this offense really needs is some of its right-handed hitters to come through. I think a lot of people see Duran as a breakout player. He had some of that breakout last year. Devers, obviously, a left-handed hitter. Tristan Casas is expected to be their number three hitter, left-handed. Yoshida's left-handed. They need a couple other right-handed hitters to pop, and then they can sprinkle them in throughout the lineup, because right now they're going to start off with three lefties in a row, which is not ideal. Even a guy like Devers, he doesn't care what arm you throw with. He's going to hit you anyway. But and we talked about a little bit on some of the shows, a recently completed labor draft. I was targeting Austin Riley in the second round, didn't get him. I was a little bit sad about that, but I had no problem pivoting to Rafael Devers as my second player. So if Rafael Devers is your second best offensive player in fantasy, I can live with that all day.
I think we're kind of both in agreement. We're like, I ranked Jose Ramirez first. He does have the best stolen base upside at the position. He stole 28 last year. There's no reason to think he's not going to steal at least 20 bases. Even if the power is declining, he should hit at least 20 home runs. He could easily be a 25-25 guy with a solid 280 batting average. That's basically what he did last year. The strikeout rate was down. The walk rate was pretty much in line with career norms. So I think for me, there is a safety and a security with Ramirez, but this is not the Ramirez who 2 years ago we were thinking, should he be the number one overall pick because of position scarcity and 36 home runs and 27 RBI, stolen bases or whatever. I'm happy if I have Ramirez. I don't necessarily need to take him 12th, 13th, 14th overall, and so I wind up with other third basemen. But I don't have any problems with him as a player. I just don't feel as much of a need to reach and get him early on. Is that kind of where you're at?
Well said. How can you take a player in the first round when you look at their offense? They were bottom five last year, and I see no reason why it's going to get any better this year. And a lot of Ramirez is the broad skills plus average, but he's not going to hit 320. He's probably going to hit 280. He's got some power, but the last 2 years, 24 and 29 home runs, that's going to lose ground to a lot of the other players who go in the first round. The run production, 87 RBIs. I'm sorry, 87 runs scored, 80 RBIs in a full season. This is my first round pick. This was a top five pick last year. Again, it's not his fault that his teammates are mediocre. It's not his fault that Cleveland has decided to pull back and not spend money. And it's a totally new day with Francona finally retired and all that stuff. I want my early picks to excite me. And even though Ramirez, it's a special guy who anybody who walks and strikes out the same level like he did last year, that's a special offensive player. I just wish I could watch him hit around the other Yankees or the other Braves or the other Rangers. Is their lineup loaded? Or Houston's top six is really, really good. I'd love to see Jose Ramirez on that kind of team, because it's certainly not what the Guardians are.
Yeah. There's nothing really to add to that. I think that's a great way to look at it. There are some players who excite us as some deeper league options or some sleepers. We'll get to those in just a second. But this Saturday, the Premier League is back on NBC and streaming on Peacock. Watch Manchester City continue their hunt for their fourth straight Premier League title when they take on Bournemouth. Coverage starts at 12:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Want the same expert advice you get from the pros in the store while shopping online at DiscountTire.com? Meet Treadwell, your personal online tire guide that matches you with the perfect tire for your vehicle. Get your best match in 1 minute or less with Treadwell by Discount Tire.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need.
That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
So Scott, let's just kind of end this with some guys you're interested in who were not in your top 20, potential corner infield targets, potential deep league targets, draft and hold. Who are you looking at third base?
Yeah, Eugenio Suarez, man. Seattle was bad for his average. Arizona will be a little bit better. I think the depth of the Diamondbacks lineup is a little bit underrated. The funny thing is, I think Arizona could easily improve by 7 or 10 wins. I think their World Series appearance was a fluke, but they're going to be a better team this year, even though they'll probably get eliminated earlier in the playoffs. I'd like to invest into this lineup, and I think Suarez gets the team change, league change at the right time. Talk about stealing divisions. I think Detroit could steal the AL Central, and Colt Keith, who qualifies at third base, will probably be their second baseman. They're going to give him every chance to win that job. I'm not saying that Detroit's lineup 1 through 9 is going to be great, but I think the top half of it might be good. I want you to get Riley wherever you can. Torkelson's coming off a 30 home run season. They finally have a number one starter in Tarik Skubal. None of them guarantee that Colt Keith's going to be good, because those are interesting players, but I even like Hinch as a manager. I think Detroit's just on the come, and maybe I'm feeling a little bit of good vibes because of the season the Lions had. The Red Wings are probably going to make the playoffs in the NHL. I think Detroit's on the upswing as well. They're going to be a winning team this year, and I think they're going to give Keith a chance at a starting job. He'll qualify at a couple of different positions. Right now, you have to draft him as a third baseman.
Love those two guys you mentioned, big on Colt Keith. I really like Michael Garcia, who's going to start for the Royals. We know that he is a speed asset. He stole 23 bases last year. I think there's a little bit more power in his bat. He hit the ball really hard, and he hit the ball hard in the air. He just didn't hit it in the air often last year. Young player, I think he could get to double-digit home runs plus with 20-plus steals and a solid batting average. The Royals like to run, so I don't expect him, his stolen base totals to drop at all. So I really like Michael Garcia. Noelvi Marte is another guy. Mm-hmm. Didn't make our list here. We've talked about like every other Reds infielder, but Noelvi Marte is likely going to be the third baseman. How many at-bats he gets as they move guys around, we don't know, but he's a really talented prospect. He was a top prospect when he was with the Mariners before he came over in the trade. So Noelvi Marte is somebody that I really like. In deeper formats, I would say Ezekiel Duran is somebody to keep an eye on, because he does seem to have a starting job with Corey Seager starting the year on the injured list. So if you are looking for somebody who you can play for the first month of the season, I think Ezekiel Duran is a really good target, because people are drafting as if you're looking for full year production. And that's great when you're drafting early round picks. But when you're drafting players for your bench, which is where he's going in drafts, you don't necessarily need to always think about like, oh, what is his stat line going to look like in September? Or am I going to use him in August? You also need just stats in April. And so if he's starting for the Rangers, we saw him do really well as a starter for the Rangers before. So I like getting Duran and pocketing those stats. And then if Seager comes back and I need to move on, so be it. I'm going to say it again. Everybody's been burned by Yoan Moncada, but there were some interesting things in his batted ball contact last year, which suggests that he's not going to be the star that everybody thought that he might be when the Red Sox traded him. But I think that he could be a usable deep league corner infield player, because I think that his batted ball quality suggested that the results were a little better than he got last year. Injuries are always a concern. But again, you're talking about somebody going at the very end of drafts, where maybe you'll get production when he's healthy, and when he's not, you know, we move on from him. And then I'm willing to take another gamble on Brett Beatty. He seems like he's going to be the third baseman for the Mets. I think that he hit the ball really hard in the minors. I don't necessarily know that that's going to translate to lots of like major league power, but I think he could, you know, be a good gap hitter who could push 15, 20 home runs and put together a solid batting average if his prospect pedigree kind of carries over.
Yeah, I'm smiling because last year at this time, DJ Short and I talked up a lot of Brett Beatty, and he obviously nothing went right for him last year. That's Beatty. It was a good year for Short. Wasn't a good year for Beatty, but post-hype applies. And piggyback something you said. Ezekiel Duran is interesting to me because not only is he going to be the shortstop while Seager can't play, but he, not that Duran's a great defender, but he can play defense pretty much anywhere.
Everywhere.
So an injury or a slump to like six different players makes him a regular for the Rangers. So just keep that in mind. If anybody gets hurt on the Rangers, all of a sudden Ezekiel Duran's in their everyday lineup. So he's probably going to get 450 or 500 at bats, even though it might be hard to see where they're coming from. We just don't know who's going to get hurt. Somebody will, and he'll end up having a job. I know he's going to have a low OBP. He strikes out way too much. Last year it was like 27%, but there'll be category juice here. And really anybody in that Texas lineup is interesting to me.
Yeah, there's sadly, we always have to account for injuries. I know at the beginning of the year, we're always optimistic that things are going to go great, but it's nice to have that backup built in. As always, you can find Scott and I on Twitter or X. I am at SamskyNYC. Scott is at Scott_Pianowski. We're going to wrap up our hitters with the outfield. We may actually have to split that up into two podcasts. We'll talk and see because there are just so many outfielders to talk about. But we'll check you back for more position breakdowns, position previews on the Roto World Baseball Show.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.